Happy Friday.
Okay.
No, it's
Easter. Is it Easter?
It's almost Easter, yeah. And it's our 42nd podcast, which to me today, for me, has significance because do you know what today is? It's World Art Day, a day in celebration.
Says who?
Says Ing. She sent me an article. It's all over the internet. Google it.
I hate when people say that.
I don't care.
If you tell me something, don't tell me to go do the research on it. Just tell me what it is.
You had to do the research. Yeah, suck it up, dude. It's World Art Day. It's a day to make art and celebrate museums and get out there and create. It's a happy day.
Isn't every day like that? Why isn't that every day?
Because it's today.
Who said that today is
UNESCO?
That
is UNESCO a thing?
Yeah, they make World Heritage Sites. They decide what we're going to save.
It's a UNESCO holiday. It's a UNESCO holiday
Nonsense.
Today.
Yeah, they don't get to make holidays. I don't know who
they make holidays.
No, they
today
don't.
Is World Art Day.
I'm not doing any art today. How about that? Anti UNESCO Day.
Well, I'm doing art today.
Fine. Painted yesterday. I always wonder about how the word professional and art intersects, because they almost seem like they're at odds. I'm not sure why. But
right.
Like, I think of
maybe it is at odds to some extent.
Painter, no, just the idea of the professional, right? The professional lawyer versus the painter.
I think inherently there are things that are considered professions, and law is one of them.
Right.
And there were hallmarks of professions in terms of like you had, a common body of knowledge, one way to get there through like some educational process. So, with ministers, lawyers, doctors, like those were considered professions. So there was one way to get there. There was a way to be vetted into it. And there was, professional bodies. And so they had to take a bar exam. They had to pass like the MCAT and then get to medical school and then, become board certified or whatever. So it was a professional track.
I know what it is. The professionals get paid, but artists don't. That's my hang up.
Oh, yeah, but artists, I think, because it doesn't really fall into the professional definition.
Well, I think it does, especially it helped hearing you recite all that, because artists can go through all that as well and become trained.
Right, but they don't have to. They don't have to.
Well, I think to be successful or to actually be good artists, I think they do have to go through some training. You don't always have to. Occasionally you'll get one who isn't.
Right. Yeah, and occasionally you'll get a Kim Kardashian who takes the baby bar in California.
I do not want to talk about the Kardashians.
Right.
But anyway, but you're right about that too. I think you can get entrepreneurs and you can get artists who don't come up through their respective systems. But if you really want to be a successful artist, it's probably good to train. I think I want my money back on the show notes because I had to do a lot of editing to them. Do you know what RISD is?
Rhode Island School of Design.
Correct. That's right. And when you do the acronym, it's RISD.
Oh, I put an E at the end.
Like 7 times. Did you do that just to troll me?
No. And it didn't look right. And I just, I'm doing this at 2 in the morning. So it's like you get what you get sometimes. Weren't done at 2 in the morning. Mea culpa.
So.
But that's hilarious.
No. I think it was well placed, because it really revealed what a prick I am, that it bothered me. Why should that bother me? I shouldn't care.
You shouldn't care. There's so much you shouldn't care about, James, and you do.
I'm just a stuck-up snob.
Yeah, I'm beginning to see that.
I'm glad someone has put all this work in. Nobody bothers to pay any attention. Anyway, talking about not people who are stuck-up snobs, do you know who Mackenzie Scott is?
Yes.
I'm not really asking you. I'm asking our listeners.
Oh,
raise your hand if you know Mackenzie Scott, listeners. Wow, 7,000 of them raised their hands.
I see that. Hello, everybody.
We can see you while you're listening to the podcast.
Go ahead.
Anyway, she's the former wife of Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
So she is one of the wealthiest women in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also noteworthy in that she is giving most of her money away. She has the biggest spender when it comes to philanthropy. Thank you. Philanthropy. She has given away 22% of her wealth, which was $12 billion. So she had a net worth of $54 billion. And so far, just in the past couple of years, she's already given away $12 billion of it, which is pretty extraordinary. I mean, obviously, when you have that much money, you could give away $53 billion and still live like a king.
Yes. And she says she's committed to giving it away until it's gone.
And she seems like she's actually doing it. And she's so much farther ahead than all the other schmucks, all the other billionaires, that it's literally embarrassing.
Right. Particularly her ex-husband.
We're going to get to him. Axios put together a short list of billionaires and how much they're giving away. She is, you know, well ahead at 22% of her net worth that she's given away already. The next guy is Phil Knight, who, I don't know, does he own some teams or something? I don't know who this guy is, but he's given away 5.7%. That's not bad. After that is Charles Koch. I don't know how genuine this is, him on the list, because he gives a lot to right-wing, not necessarily right-wing, but Republican foundations and stuff like that. So I don't know how much of that is genuine philanthropy versus just political giving. And then there's a lizard king, Mark Zuckerberg, at $3 billion. So that's 2.7% he's given away. The next one was a little embarrassing. Steve Ballmer, who is the former CEO of Microsoft, one of the original founders of Microsoft. He's only at 2.2%. He's got $97 billion, and he's only given away about $2 billion of it. And the reason that I find that a little bit embarrassing for him, because A, when he's transitioned to CEO, he was not a good CEO of Microsoft. He really sort of oversaw the decline of Microsoft. When Microsoft went from the number one platform, both web and PC, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a point at which Internet Explorer was literally 97% market share. And he oversaw the period where it went from that to zero, basically. And he's just a sales guy. He's just a sales guy. He didn't create anything. He got lucky that he got in on Microsoft at the beginning, and he's just a sales guy. And so I think he could be a little bit more self-aware of how lucky he has been and give a little bit more of that away. But of course, who takes the cake, Catherine? Who's the number one douchebag on our list here?
Well, Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos has given away a whopping 1.1% of his staggering $185 billion. How does that make you feel?
It doesn't make me feel anything.
It makes me feel like a little hollow as well, I guess. It's like, if you have that much money, why? What are you doing with it?
He's making penis-shaped rockets.
Peanut or penis?
Penis.
Oh, penis. He's not even very good at that, you know, because he keeps having to get bailed out from, he keeps trying to sue NASA and have them bail him out. And the government bills, he's got like $500 million coming back to him in some of the government bills that are up right now. Because he can't carry his own weight. I don't know why we need to pay him $500 million for his stupid little rockets that aren't very good if he's sitting on $185 billion.
Well, that's why I don't buy anything ever off of Amazon. And I mean that. I mean that. I've never.
I do occasionally when it's convenient, but I tried to find other places, mostly because you never know if it's going to be authentic stuff or not.
That's the point. It's like, you know, and I don't want to support him, and B, I don't know if it's authentic, repackaged, something someone bought off of eBay. You know, it's garbage. I don't know how they're vetting that stuff.
They don't.
And I will pay more from the distributor or whatever than I will ever do it on Amazon. So
you know, China is very good at knocking stuff off, and they're so at knocking stuff off that they will knock off the SKU as well. The SKU, the little number.
Oh, they knock off. Yeah, exactly. The products. Yes.
So they will, and Amazon doesn't verify where something comes from. So you can send something in with a copy SKU'd on it that you knocked off from some other product. Mm-hmm. It literally goes into the same bin. Like, for instance, let's say Teva. You want to buy some Teva sandals? Teva will make some sandals. They'll send them into the Amazon warehouse, and it'll go into the specific bin. Someone can knock off the Teva sandal as well as that same SKU. And when it comes in Amazon doesn't see if it came from Teva. They just, if it has that SKU, it goes into the exact same bin with the authentic Teva sandals.
Right, right.
Of course, it doesn't do that anymore because of that, Teva pulled out of Amazon smartly, and smartly so.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Well,
boy.
Yes. I mean, I could go off too. Like, you can cut this if you want. But years ago, I read an article where people were proving this, and so the people who wrote the article, they actually dumpster dove, and got some stuff that looked like it was intact, and one of the jars of jam was actually out of date, and they made their own little store on Amazon and posted these like four or five items, and then listed them, and they got listed. And they ended up purchasing it, but they're like, it's friggin' dumpster dive shit.
Well, at least that was originally authentic, though.
But that's the point. It's like they dumpster dove. I mean, that, you know, they're like, it's gross. And from that point on, I wasn't ever intrigued with Amazon, but I didn't want to support Bezos and that whole thing. I didn't like they were putting businesses out of business and taking over communities. And the bookstores really hit the skids when Amazon came, which was very dear to my heart. And enough of that.
Okay.
Enough of that.
In other retail news, some Russian shoppers, along with their morning shopping, they got some news. There's this one, people are calling her an artist, and this is what I'm curious about, whether she's an artist or not, but this one provocateur was going into the grocery stores and recreating the sales tags, right? You'd have how much something costs and then the description of it, and she was recreating those tags with little snippets about the war in Ukraine, since Russia is... you know, blocking all the real news that's coming out of it. And so one example of that was on a little coffee marker. She said, the Russian army bombed an art school in Mariupol?
Yeah, it's good enough, yeah.
Roughly 400 were sheltering there from artillery fire. So the 400 is what is listed as the price of the item. another one was
That was brilliant.
Another one was Russian troops prevented 14 trucks loaded with humanitarian aid from entering the Kherson region. Civilians need food and water. And the 14 she pulled out at the price for some a little package of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty clever. And like I said, people are referring to this as artist. And as I said, I think she's just more of a provocateur. Is this art?
Well, I don't think people are referring to her as an artist on her Instagram. And the artist's name is Alexandra Gochelenko. She actually self-describes herself as an artist and an activist on her Instagram account, which I didn't find her on Instagram. I don't know if it's probably been all taken down because, you know, currently she is incarcerated.
Right? Awaiting trial.
Awaiting trial till what, May 31st?
Oh, actually, let me put that in quotes. Awaiting, quote, trial.
Yeah, she describes herself as an artist, an independent artist and musician. She has a history of this. She was fined like 10,000 rubles in March. She took part in a protest on February 24th, the day that the Russian troops entered Ukraine, I guess.
So do you think this is art?
It's activism. It reminded me of a book that I bought years ago that was called Yarn Bombing, where a bunch of fiber artists would just make kind of protest pieces or just big balls of yarn or embed, like, you know, like do an intarsia kind of knitting process.
Wait, what was that called?
Intarsia.
What is that?
Like where you can make like little, you know, like if you see something that has like a little bunny head or someone does piece, like they change the yarn so you can actually write out something or make like little designs. You know, think like ski sweater with like the little snowflake designs.
Mm-hmm.
That's intarsia.
Oh, and so intarsia is just decorated, like painting
like
with fibers?
It's like painting with, okay, right, exactly.
Seems like a really fancy word.
Yeah, there's all kinds of words. So there's they would do these things and write like peace or no war and do different things and then just stick it on a lamppost or stick it on a bulletin board
desert. Would they knit it around the lamppost? Like...
No,
like
they would knit, no, like, okay. Say you would just knit, like, a thing, and then you'd maybe button it, and they would just leave it there.
Because I saw that several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, that seemed like really popular for a little while, where they were knitting things over things like lampposts.
Right, yeah, and that was part of it. So they called it yarn bombing, and it was, like, kind of this act, like, part of this was an activism deal, you know. And so, but what I really thought it was, did you watch Colbert at all this week?
No, I don't watch Colbert.
Well, I watch it because Mom watches it at night. But anyway, I think it was on Tuesday. He had Representative Cori Bush on from Missouri, you know, the first African-American female to win Missouri's, you know, House of Representatives. She's in the U.S. House.
Okay.
Anyway, she was talking about, you know, she identifies herself as a single parent, an RN, a pastor, and an activist. And then he asked, and was probably very well rehearsed, but he's like, so now you're a politician. How do you balance the activism with the politics? And she said, well, I want to coin the term politivist.
What?
And I thought that was cool. And so I see this as kind of like yarn bombing and politivism, you know, where this woman who self-describes as an artist, like she's expressing herself. It is a creative process. I mean, I don't know that I would have thought, oh, I'm going to go in there and say, like, you know, coffee's now like, you know, $17.99 a pound. And, you know, I'm going to find some tidbit of information about 1,799 some things and then add. I mean, so I think it was a creative process. Mm-hmm. Is it art? You know, I guess, I mean, if you go by, again, I'll always default to your definition, James, of it eliciting an emotional response.
Well, it also, wait, hang on a second. That's only half the definition. You keep repeating only half the definition. It has to
have a level
of craft, and it also has to have a reasonable spark of, has to make you feel something, but more than just something passing. It has to be something serious and something deep.
I think this was serious and deep, and I think anyone who saw those
I don't think it was serious and deep. It was interesting. It was, you know, it was like what one of the things I liked about it, since it was on coffee, it's kind of a wake up call, right? You get this, it's like, it takes you, you know, it can push you. It's like a good joke or something like that. It just pushes you out of your normal thinking routine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you stare at the price tag and all of a sudden the price tag is telling you about the war crimes in Ukraine. It's like, that's not what you're expecting. So it's absolutely, it's very creative. It's very provocative. I'm just not sure if it's art. That's fine. It doesn't have to be art. I'm just wondering.
It doesn't have to be art. You know, it doesn't have to be art. I think it was artistic. I think it was creative. Let's go. I would give her creative.
And clever.
And clever, very clever. And dangerous, because she's sitting in, she could possibly serve up to, what, 10 to 15 years in prison?
It was courageous. It was absolutely courageous. Anything like this in Russia is very courageous. I mean, literally holding up blank signs in Gorky Park is getting people arrested. There's an old joke that I don't know. It wasn't old to me, but people are bantering it around like it's an old joke from the Soviet era. It's you know, there's a protester in Gorky Park holding up a blank sign. And the police officer goes up and says, "Why is the sign blank?" And the protester's like, "Well, you know what it would say."
Love it.
I don't have to write it because you know. We all know. No one's being fooled here. We all know what the problem is. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, she's facing this harsh sentence. They're accusing her of political hatred for Russia.
The military. Hating the military or something like that.
Hating the military. But interestingly, at the end of the article, there were similar protests. Did you see that?
Don't remember that part.
Maybe it was a different article. Anyway, I read a little bit. There was in Kazan, some activists also replaced price tags in the store with messages of anti-war agitation, as it were.
I like it. I think it's very clever. It's very comedic.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, just shocks you out of your normalcy. You know, it's just twisting reality a little bit.
Right.
I guess we could follow it up with some nice news.
What's the nice news?
Some actual art or something that I saw this past week that I was like, wow, that is really clever. I love that. And it was a 1,400-page book, Catherine, that you can wear on your wrist.
I saw that.
That's crazy. So it's the title of the article is 14,000 Pages of Rembrandt's Hand Drawings Fill a Wearable Book Bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
And what this is not 1,400 pages as you would normally imagine 1,400 pages, but it's a small booklet with tiny little pages, and it's kind of like a ruff around your wrist, and the pages just not spiral, but they wrap around your wrist, and you can just open up at any point and see a little tidbit of a Rembrandt drawing.
Right. It is truly the definition of wearable art.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a literal definition. It's a literal example. It's stitch bound, like a decent real book is stitch bound. So that's on the inside, so you can fan it out on the outside. And the edges of the pages have gold on them. So it looks like a bracelet. And then you get closer to it, and you can start flipping through the pages, and you realize it's a book on your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
When you take it off, you can lay it flat, and it becomes this very rectilinear piece, like a square stick. And they made a beautiful book box for it as well that you can slide it into. So like every part of this really kind of hit my craft nerve endings. Like, oh, this is really nicely crafted. It's really clever way of making a book into a wearable thing to begin with. And then to also just fill it with drawings from a master.
Right.
It's
delightful. 14. Yeah, it is delightful. The 1,400 black and white images of Rembrandt, and all the images are of hands.
Oh, I should read these things a little more carefully.
You should. Yes, it was like from 303 of Rembrandt's drawings, and it was bound into a thick book, and it was actually taken from the collection of this, I can't pronounce the museum.
Yeah. Who can, really?
I know.
Excuse me. Anyway, the artists involved were Liske Gaius and Leah Dunker, or something close to that. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing the names.
Oh, it was the Rijksmuseum.
The Rijksmuseum. It's Rijksmuseum.
Is it Rick's Museum? Yeah, okay.
It's just Rick. It's Rick's Museum.
Okay, it's a Rick's Museum. Right. Well, I thought it was interesting that Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum acquired the original ones, but they made 10 of these, and they were still available on their website. Did you go to their website?
No, I didn't. I should have.
Yeah, it was cool. And they talked a lot about, you know, their process and the gilt edges and the 18-karat gold class that was fashioned by a goldsmith. And it was really, it was quite interesting.
It's a lovely little thing. And what I like about it is initially I was thinking, oh, that would be something you just take out on special occasions and wear to like a gala or something. How many galas have you been to, Catherine?
One.
Yeah, I think I've been to one as well. I guess we're not really gala people. But anyway, but you can imagine that someone dressed up really nicely and going to a really popular function. But then I was thinking, I thought the exact opposite. Like, what if you just wore this every day? Imagine what this thing would look like after a year of wearing it every day.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to wear it.
Well, I think that'd be kind of delightful too, because it would start to wear out, but it'd still be a book, and books are tough. You know, it wouldn't fall apart. It would still be, you know, intact. It would just be a little rough around the edges.
Right. Gaius and Dunker also did like this design after the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum acquired this. They did a necklace version of it.
Oh. Cool.
With similar style that featured Rembrandt's dogs.
Okay.
Isn't that awesome?
Dogs like, are always awesome. So,
yeah, I just thought that was good.
What kind of dogs did he have?
I don't know. I didn't see the book.
Oh. Well, maybe you should buy the book.
It's like expensive. I was interested because it said that how the book was put together, it was put together with the golden ratio.
Oh, was it?
Did you see that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, people love throwing that in, though.
The golden ratio.
That's, you know, kind of silly.
I thought it was interesting.
No, I know.
The math nerd in me.
People try to make so much out of that. It's an interesting ratio, but it's, you know, only gets you so far.
Right. But I think, like, in design, though, if it's my recollection, isn't it? Doesn't that just necessarily mean that all elements are balanced?
No.
And aesthetically pleasing?
No.
I know it is a number derived from the Fibonacci sequence,
right.
Yada, yada, yada. But I was obsessed with the Fibonacci sequence and knitting. And did a couple projects.
That makes sense. For some reason, that seems like it would make sense in knitting.
I made a really long scarf, almost like a Doctor Who scarf.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the old Doctor Who scarf?
Yeah, but yeah. I think he was number four, the fourth Doctor.
The fourth, yeah, when he did. And they actually have that Doctor Who scarf online where you can download with even the old colors. And these are old colors of yarn. I don't think they make them anymore. And so I wasn't going to go through it. A lot of people are allergic to wool. I do a lot of vegan-friendly stuff.
Really?
And I thought, well... Yeah, so I thought, you know, I'm going to do this, and I can't even remember. I think it was some sort of bamboo, and I had just a bunch of random yarn. I'm like, you know, how about if I just do it in the Fibonacci sequence, and then it'll either run out or it won't. And then I just lined up all the yarns with, like, the smaller balls at the beginning to the bigger balls and did this, like, until it ran out. And I did and it was actually very cool. I sold it. So it turned out nice. But
just a crass.
Yeah.
Capitalist at the end of the day, just like
yeah,
Jeff
whatever.
Bezos.
Yeah, not like Jeff Bezos, but
you've probably given away more of your wealth than he has.
I've given away more of my.
I think it's almost impossible not to have given away more than 1.1% of your wealth.
Yeah, just every day.
And just imagine how little effort that would take.
Very little effort. Yeah, I could knock that out by hand.
It's like he's got to like purposely be not giving money away.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to talk about Jeff Bezos.
Okay,
just looking
fair
at
enough.
Him.
Yeah.
I just
well, you don't have to look at him.
Thank God. Thank God. Is that it for today? Is that all we have? I thought we had more.
Oh, we had more, but you know, I mean, the rest of the stuff was just more negative news. If you want, though, I can throw it. I can leave with one.
What?
I just a random quote that I pulled from one of the articles we did not cover today.
What?
Maybe that's what our show should be. Just random quotes from stories we don't actually talk about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This was funny. A person in the art world claimed drinking alcohol throughout the day and using illegal drugs is how art deals are done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So think about that. I don't know. I actually ran a gallery for many years, and I didn't drink throughout the day or ever, and I didn't use any illegal drugs.
Okay, that's good.
But maybe that's why I, you know, never made any money.
I think you're referring to Inigo Philbrick. He's known as the art world's mini Madoff. Done?
I think so.